All right, welcome back to Hash Rate Up. This is another episode. Thank you for tuning in. Today, I am back. It's been a while with my friend Daniel Johnson, straight out of Iceland. Hello, Daniel. How are you doing?
Hello, Jesse. Good over here. It is, even though it is quite dark and cold in this part of the world these days. But yes, very, very glad to be back on the podcast with you.
Hash Rate Up. Hardware sales, advisory, hosting, and site brokerage. Find new and used ASIC deals through the website and the Telegram channel below. Make smarter decisions with Hashrate Up. No 25 degrees for you. Right. Daniel, you are mining and involved in mining in Finland. That's what I would like to talk to you about. I know being in Iceland, you're involved in the scene there as well. But give me a brief overview. Why is mining in Finland so hot right now? Why is there so much development and why do people want to go there? What do you think is the reason?
Yes. So we've been working on projects in Finland for a while now. We have Finnish partners over there with whom we are developing two separate sites at the moment. I think Finland is quite popular for a couple of reasons, basically. One is power prices are relatively attractive there. If you know, you can just go there and buy power on the spot market, and it makes sense. As with pretty much every location in the world, I would say, there are always some, you know, looming challenges and threats to some extent. There's always someone in the political landscape talking about wanting to change the tax here or there or whatever. We know this from our industry. It doesn't really seem there doesn't really seem to exist a corner of the world where you are not threatened by these things. So Finland is no exception there. But yeah, at its core, the power prices are attractive. The majority of the grid is renewable or green energy. They have a base load which is nuclear powered. About 41% of the grid is nuclear powered at this point. They have a lot of wind, and they have a lot of hydro. The wind creates an environment where grid balancing is very much needed, and I think those are two of the additional revenue streams that are very, very exciting, which is grid balancing, which are grid balancing and heat reuse. So to me, that is why Finland is an attractive destination. Also, the continuous build out of energy in Finland. They don't seem to be particularly slowing down at the moment. Their neighboring countries are also not slowing down. So it's not as if all the energy that is being built will be built for export. All around, quite an attractive location to us, and it's the Nordics. You know, it's one of the best locations you can find in the world, I would say, at the moment.
Easy cooling, clean air. How much transmission is there? Do you know how much transmission infrastructure exists, and how much power could be potentially sent? Because I know that's what, for instance, makes power so cheap in northern Norway, right? Is you have all that hydro there. But no way really to send it down to the population centers, and there's not much demand up north where all the supply is. Is it the same case for Finland, or is it different?
No, I don't think it's as extreme in Finland as it is in Norway. I think they seem to have a bit more robust grid in that sense. But again, you know, what the Nordics have been developing over the last few years is this democratization of the grid balancing activity. So it's an open market. Anyone can participate in that. You know, you place some bids and you get paid for providing these services, these necessary services to the grid. So the management of the grid in Finland and the neighboring countries as well, to some extent, seems to be, you know, quite developed in that sense. They are very actively working on not finding themselves in a situation like the United Kingdom, for example, who are paying over £1 billion pounds annually for wind farms to curtail their production. So it's a pretty insane scenario, and I think they are very actively trying to avoid that happening in the Nordics and Finland in particular.
Okay, so would you say then that what's the bigger boost to Bitcoin mining? Grid demand response or heat reuse?
That's a good question. I think to some extent the answer can be it depends, but if you want to look at the opportunities of scale, grid balancing is where it's at. Heat reuse is a lot more complicated. I mean, if you're going to go and if you want to take on the role of heat provider, then you need to install further infrastructure. You need your heat pumps. You probably have 100% uptime guarantee because, you know, if people are going to be buying heat from you, they probably need that heat 100% of the time, or at least to be available 100% of the time. And I think there are higher levels of complexity when it comes to heat reuse. I think there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of unexplored opportunities to the heat reuse side of things, but grid balancing you can do with a relative size and the levels of complexity are lesser, lower.
Okay, but then can you even do grid balancing and heat reuse, or do you have to choose one really? Because if you do heat reuse, you have to be on all the time.
This is a great question. There are scenarios. We have been in a very interesting conversation with a company that have ways to store the heat. And this can be very valuable, okay. Obviously. So if there are ways to store the heat, then, you know, we have more flexibility with our uptime. And that's the
okay.
Key. Obviously, in grid balancing, that's the key. We have to have flexibility with our uptime. In our models, we are assuming that we will be mining Bitcoin around 70% of the time on average. If you look at it on a year's basis, for example, then we are assuming we mine Bitcoin 70% of the time, but the added revenue from grid balancing is so significant that this is not a loss. I mean, this is only a loss if you're really, really chasing after, you know, new Bitcoin. If you absolutely want to have that Coinbase Bitcoin, then sure, it's a loss. If you don't care, you can just take the additional revenue and buy more Bitcoin than you would have had at 100% uptime with.
Okay, fair enough. What machines are you using? If you do, you said 70% uptime?
Yeah.
Grid demand response Finland, what machines are you guys
deploying?
Or your partners, sorry.
So, I mean, the thing, what's quite interesting about grid balancing is you can do this on older gen equipment. So as long as you have machines that you can run, that you can scale relatively quickly, that you can, you know, that you can have relatively responsive, and you can see the development in, you know, our industry. More and more companies are developing custom firmware with the specific role of being easy to manage on this level of where you can, you know, you can scale them down in terms of going into low power mode or underclocking to some extent, on some level even overclocking. You know, there are scenarios where you might want to increase your usage by, you know, 10-15% maybe safely. And you see companies, you know, you see these companies like Luxor who are, you know, basically stepping into like, hey, we are more of a power company than we are a mining pool at this point, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so, but I mean, yeah, I mean, is it then, so when, like, you say,
I mean, the, S19, are we talking... you can deploy S19. In our back tests, you know, we could have run S9s in, we could have run S9s all of last year and we would have made money on them.
Okay. Yeah. Just, very fast ROIs.
Just to put that in. That's a very fast
scrap,
ROI.
Because, scrap metal.
Yeah, because it's scrap metal, basically. As long as, you know, you can get them for free, basically. You know, to us, this is what's very, very beautiful about this. You're changing the risk profile of setting up a mining operation entirely. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the grid and the energy market of Finland is very interesting already. So, you know, we can kind of assume around 17% of the time we can be mining for free, and that's just buying power off the grid. About 6% of the time, spot power. Around 6% of the time, we get paid for taking the power. So that, and the, you know, the rest of the hours that are super cheap, it amounts to around 17% of all hours that come out at around zero. So sure, you're going to have some costs, and but my point being, you know, mining, we've been around this for a while now, and mining is a game of surviving the rough times. You know, when that nuclear winter comes around, you need to not be over leveraged, you need to not be stuck in PPAs with take or pay clauses and so on and so on. So it gives us a lot of peace of mind to know that 17% of the time we can be generating revenue no matter what.
Hmm.
Like in
yeah, world, I mean, prices are, if you look at the power curves, I mean, would you agree that prices are likely to fall? I mean, you mentioned the nuclear, you mentioned the wind and the solar build out. And that's what I've been hearing. Maybe you can confirm that, right? That I think you kind of said that already, like that in the future to come, in the midterm, long term, there's going to be an oversupply, more likely than an undersupply of energy. So prices will have to follow that, right?
Yeah, remains to be seen a little bit. I mean, the AI rush could be affecting this to some extent. You know, if you're involved in the data center or energy industries, you know, some of these people are experiencing for the first time ever what we have experienced a couple of times already. So if you were around the, you know, Bitcoin mining in 2018 or 2021, you just remember those days when you would get a call and people go, oh yeah, I need 500 megawatts as soon as you can, you know, and it's just like, that's an insane demand. I can't fill that demand. Nobody can fill that demand on a short-term basis, you know? And I think a lot of people from the traditional industries, from the traditional data center and energy industries are now, you know, receiving these calls. So I think this is the only thing that could change the outlook, which indeed does point to lower energy prices over, you know, at least the next 5 years, I would say. If AI doesn't slow down, this can change, is my point.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
So talking about size, Daniel, how quickly can you turn around a 5 megawatt site or a 50 megawatt site?
Yeah, so maybe...
Talk maybe a bit about the projects that you are looking to do.
Sure. So... in our experience from having spent a good while now looking at different sites and opportunities in Finland, It seems the most common path to market is you have to start on a smaller scale. So you have to start with 5 to 10 megawatts. And to us, we can turn that around relatively quickly. In some cases, maybe you're looking at, I would say in most of these sites that we have been looking at, we've been looking at go live in the span of maybe like 8 to 12 months. So it's not ultra quick.
Okay.
Like it takes a while. Even if you're putting down containers, you need building permits, and this is still Europe. There's a lot of regulation. You can't just show up and do whatever. So always some hoops to jump through. And I mentioned, like, in terms of a path to get to a bigger size. So I would say at the moment we have a pipeline which can, depending on a couple of factors, we have a pipeline at the moment which maybe in the next 3 to 3.5 years could quite easily amount to maybe 250 megawatts. So we have a couple of sites. One is starting at 5 megawatts, one is starting at 9 megawatts. The 5 megawatt site is something that in from our go live point in the following 2.5 years or so, we could be turning on 120 to 200 megawatts on that site alone. So, but there's a path. Like, you have to start smaller. You're starting with the local TSO. It's very likely that they will have to either build a grid connection point or upgrade an existing grid connection point for you to be able to get the high voltage from FinGrid directly. From there, you can start touching, true scale. That being said, there are always some locations in Finland that are for sale that are these industrial, old paper mills and so on and so on.
But already has power.
Say it again. Yeah.
Already has power installed.
Yeah, already has set up and go. Infrastructure installed and so on. But, the problem with that is in the current landscape, everybody has, dollar signs in their eyes. So these have become quite expensive in recent times, I would say. They don't really make sense like that.
I talked to you about the project that I'm doing in South Africa, and when you go to people who own the power, right, mm-hmm. and you dare mention the word Bitcoin, they immediately think, whoa, okay, let's make some money.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're like, no, hash price is 35. Yeah. Chill. Like, yeah. It's not that great.
Yeah. We're making a few bucks.
And you got to manage
normal activity.
And it's like, what do you mean you want to pay 2 cents because the power is free? I'm like, yeah, it's all I can afford.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm installing old machines. Okay, I mean, still, no matter the size, Bitcoin mining is an expensive industry to be in. You got a lot of capex to get. Before we started talking, Daniel, you mentioned the fund that you're setting up. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, absolutely. So, we have been, I myself have been mining since 2017. And we've been doing this at scale in Iceland since 2019. Built a lot of connections around the industry, made a lot of friends like yourself and many other people. There are two, and I'm building up to it later, two things that led us to our current project. One is we've been looking at Finland for a while now, and we feel like the opportunity that is present in Finland today is attractive enough and of a scale that is large enough to warrant really going after it. But there's another angle to that, which is the Nordics are kind of just the start of that. I mentioned earlier, you have countries like the United Kingdom who are literally paying over £1 billion. I think so far in 2025, they have paid wind farm operators over £1.2 billion to curtail production because they can't take it on. The grid is so inefficient. So we know there are massive inefficiencies around energy production, and that are only increased with the volatility of renewable energy. So we think that in the coming, you know, let's say 5 years, there's going to be a mass of opportunities for Bitcoin mining. And you don't even have to look outside Europe, just in Europe.
I agree.
We decided to create what we call MGMT Digital Infrastructure Fund, which is a mining-focused digital infrastructure fund set up as a PE fund registered in Luxembourg, where we will initially, for example, go and build out some of these data center sites that we have been looking at in Finland, capitalize on grid balancing and potentially heat reuse to absolutely minimize the both, you know, obviously minimize the risk in the model and maximize the returns in the model. And that's maybe my second point on our reasoning behind doing this in a fund structure is knowing, having all these connections around the industry, you know, having been operating for a few years and built a certain level of trust, we get deal flow, we get opportunities regularly. And what can be quite frustrating is when you have a great opportunity in front of you, it requires a certain amount of funding that you're, you know, perhaps not in a position to deploy directly yourself, and you need to start, you know, selling the deal. You need to start matchmaking. You need to start searching for partners. It's a great deal. We know it's a great deal. We've identified it. We have the experience and expertise to actually execute on the deal, but we just don't have the funding. So we wanna turn that around quite a bit by raising this fund, so that we can effectively just be the principal on, you know, we've already had the conversations with investors. They've already entrusted us with funds that we will then take care of deploying and executing projects with. So yeah, we're just starting that journey actually of raising the funds, finding LPs for the fund, and we are very eager to start deploying and executing from there.
So if I'm an investor, mm-hmm. right, what's sort of the minimum ticket size that you guys want to go after, and what do you guys promise investors?
It's 100k.
Like, what's the return?
Yeah, so the minimum ticket is 100k euros. It's set up, like I mentioned earlier, it's set up like a traditional private equity fund. So it's a 220 fund. It's registered in Luxembourg. We're looking at a, you know, 5 year lifetime of the fund, and obviously you always do have an option of, you know, continuation or a second fund buying out the assets of the first fund and so on. What are we promising to investors? I mean, obviously we're promising a world-class team that will deploy these funds into sensible and profitable mining projects. You know, what we set down as our target IRR is, you know, 25% to 35%, which is great for a PE fund. You know, to be honest, you know, obviously I want to outperform that target, but sometimes, you know, you're familiar with mining, so you can. So it's a 25% to 35% IRR is the target, not just 25% or 35% on the whole fund. So 25% to 35% IRR is a great return in the PE world. You are familiar with mining, so you know if we sit down and we start modeling things, and I show you an IRR of 50% to 100%. This makes sense to you. Sometimes these conversations can get kind of tricky when we show those type of numbers, because people go like, okay, where's the illegal activity that's going to happen in here to make those kinds of returns? Yeah. Where's the pyramid? Exactly. So we just do our conservative estimate of returns, and then we just outperform that and everybody's happy. A key element
under promise and over deliver.
Yeah, of course. But no, a key element of our fund is, however, we want to do, as you know, Bitcoin mining generates healthy cash flow. These additional activities that we want to participate in also generate additional revenue streams of healthy cash flow. So we want to do distributions out of the fund as soon as it starts generating cash flow. So, you know, I know like a lot of people from the private equity world, that there's a certain level of fatigue with LPs because they'll put money into a fund and then the fund managers will try to do everything so that, you know, effectively the LPs almost never see their money again because there's just a continuation and a continuation and so on. But we want to aim for being relatively liquid. And, you know, over the lifetime of the fund, you know, to be in a position where we have already returned your capital in full and we still have all the assets and we're still generating cash flow. And then, you know, it's easy to foresee a world where you have a luxury problem at the end of the fund and you're deciding on whether to continue or sell off the assets. And, you know,
successful, it's a great way to raise more and to go after bigger projects. I mean, 120 would, you know, more than 100 megawatts in Finland is a serious business.
Yes.
And I do agree, like, the, you know, you can see the subsidies in Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Finland,
yeah.
The UK, like, it becomes more and more difficult to afford these subsidies, yeah. Especially as the finances of these countries are stretched. And all of a sudden, you know, Bitcoin mining is still around. When your government subsidy falls away, Bitcoin mining all of a sudden becomes really interesting.
Yeah, but even if you look at it from the standpoint of these subsidies happening, there's something to be said for just the management of public funding do you know what I mean? Like, how does it make sense that we live in a world where, you know, we are shutting down older equipment because it's no longer profitable? We're trying to chase low power prices somewhere across the world to keep equipment alive. And there's literally a government entity somewhere in England paying someone to not produce power because there's no off-taker for it. Like,
it doesn't make sense.
Massive inefficiency there, it's just in my opinion, we are still in a world where we're still dealing with the tail end of the negative narrative around Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and so on, and that is the only reason for which we don't have every single power producer and grid operator and even government, nation state chasing us to come and use power somewhere. It's because there's still that lingering thought of, you know, there's something weird about Bitcoin. You know, someone managed to convince you at some point that it was only for, you know, illicit activities or whatever false narrative people were sold, but that's changing a lot very rapidly. I feel in the last 2 years you can see the shift. Obviously, we have the ETFs in the US. You have some of these biggest asset management houses of the world that are positively talking about Bitcoin. They're saying Bitcoin should be part of your pension plan. You know, in the US, they've opened the ETF to 401k plans and so on. So, like, this is shifting. And as I did mention the other day when I was talking about this, it's funny because it's a bit hard to be too angry or annoyed at the negative narrative that has been dominating, particularly in Europe, for example, about Bitcoin, because this very narrative that creates the opportunity of arbitrage that we have in front of us. You know, basically the fact
100%.
The fact that nobody's doing
exactly
that is an opportunity for me and my company, and we are chasing that, you know.
BitX, solomining.de, got it. Premium made in Germany. You want to go fancy? Go for NerdX or NerdQX++ for a lot of power. Worldwide shipping. Check out solomining.de today. And I mean, look, it's still a matter of, you know, the problem isn't great enough. You know, if you're in the UK and you're the UK government and you have the funding available to just, you know, make the problem go away, by spending money on it, you know, and the public accepts it, well, that's the past of lesser resistance, right? Yeah. Now learning about Bitcoin and getting that in there and not understanding it, and like it's too much, and it's too, you know, there's lower hanging fruit. But as you said, you know, we're sort of at the forefront there, just waiting. We find opportunities all the time that we can execute on. It's only going to get more. Plus, you know, even within Bitcoin mining, it's interesting to talk to those who really understand hardware cycles. You know, it's comparatively easy to buy the newest gen equipment and employ it in a data center somewhere, pay the hosting bill or developer or whatever and run it, right? But this is like what I talked with Tom from HashBranch about in the last episode. You know, this is type 3 facilities, old equipment, and there's so much of it. You know, the Bitcoin mining is big enough now that the used hardware is getting more and more every month, and it needs a new home. And finding that home and running it efficiently and well and executing on these opportunities with low uptime, low power pricing, that's I think where the honey is produced.
Exactly. That's what's
kind
of really so frustrating around this is when you know, like, there's a government somewhere, they're paying over £1 billion per year, and we could literally go there and deploy hundreds of megawatts of older gen equipment and eat up all this energy if the willingness was there to solve it.
But that's why we deal with privates, you know, because there's no red tape. And there's a true incentive to make as much money as possible.
That's why
I like to deal with.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, I said this on stage. I was speaking in a panel last week at the Bitcoin Amsterdam conference, and I was saying if you are trying to chase these opportunities, don't waste your time talking to government entities or, you know, some of these public offices and bodies. Go after the private sector. They are the only ones willing to actually solve the problems. They are the only ones that have true incentive to turn wasted energy into money, basically.
Daniel, I want to give you a chance to quickly highlight what mining looks like in Iceland. I know you guys have had a rocky time over there with government and public policy while we're on the topic. And after you did that, I would like to quickly go into a round of rapid fire with you and then close out.
Okay, perfect. So a bit of color on Iceland. The short answer is Iceland is annoying. And here's why. So we got hit really bad with the worst year of water reservoirs a couple of years ago. So 2023 into 2024, we were curtailed massively, because those are the types of contracts that we make. We are trying to be a positive force for the energy system and the power grid here in Iceland. Happy to do those contracts, but water reservoirs were at like decades lows. We got curtailed. And at the same time, as you rightfully mentioned, the public entity that is generating over 80% of Iceland's power were very much talking us down. And a lot of industry participants were not really fighting against it. So the data center companies, they're like, look, it's not worth it for us to fight this. There is a shift happening to AI. They just kind of rolled with it. But this was very much a top-down thing where they were just saying, publicly they were saying, oh, we don't want activities like Bitcoin mining in Iceland, which is a fairly silly thing to say when you understand Bitcoin mining and power production and grid operations, because Bitcoin mining is literally one of the best inventions for power grids in the world in many decades, right? So they were kind of pushing, I'm not going to say pushing us out, but soft pushing us out. So they were like not renewing power contracts, saying, you know, demanding or mandating in their contracts with the data centers that none of the power sold to the data center would be used for Bitcoin mining, and so on and so on. We spent a lot of time trying to talk to these people saying, okay, this is going to turn around. There will be excess power again. Let's try to work together, figure something out so that we can at least still be in place here. And when there's excess power, we can act on that, right? Not a lot of willingness to entertain that conversation. This is particularly frustrating today when one of the large aluminium smelters had a massive fault and 2/3 of their production is now offline. I would say, so there's a silica plant that went bankrupt. There's another silica plant that has lowered their production. There's an aluminium power plant that has 2/3 of their power production offline. I would say there's probably around or above 500 megawatts of available power floating into the sea right now. And as we just said, if I pick up the phone or I start sending emails and I start talking to these power producers, basically the only ones even answering us are the privately owned ones, the public ones.
Yep.
And to sum it up, we ask these guys the question, would you rather have some revenue or no revenue? And the attitude is, we would definitely rather have no revenue, which is particularly...
But do you think, that's just like a defensive response, but do you think public entities understand that the wealth of Iceland depends on power exportation in the form of, you know, these aluminium smelters?
I think they understand.
Anything else that's power intensive.
I mean, back in the 60s and 70s, we made the decision of attracting aluminium smelters here because we made the decision of exporting power. There were no subterranean power lines available or anything like that, and still aren't. So we decided to try to lobby for the aluminium industry, successfully so. So these people understand it, but there's definitely a lack of fiduciary duty in my mind from the point of view that this is just politics. This is just pure politics. They are not willing to have, they know, they understand what a great customer Bitcoin mining is. I just told you, we've been engaging in curtailable energy contracts, but we're still paying a higher price than most of the other industry participants. We are a dream customer, right? And they know this, but they're just not willing to publicly engage in the conversation when some environmentalists write an article saying Bitcoin mining should not exist in Iceland. They're not willing to step up and say, listen, I understand your point, but you're wrong. And let me explain why you are wrong. They just can't be bothered. You know, it's a political thing and their perception is more important than actually monetizing the this, you know, natural asset of Iceland that we have decided
to but look us, you know you go after the lowest hanging fruit. Now you take your talents to Finland.
That's right,
where it's much easier. Right, let's do a quick round of rapid fire.
Sure.
Before we close out.
Sure.
Finland or Iceland? More confidence for the next 24 months. I think the answer is easy.
Yeah, Finland.
Most underrated advantage of mining in Finland?
Grid balancing.
One thing people consistently misunderstand about mining in Iceland?
They think it's a cheap location. It's absolutely not a cheap location. It's a premium location.
Okay, it's a want to be there location. If you could lock in one power price for 5 years, what number makes you comfortable for in Finland? If you had to choose a power price for the next 5 years, where are you?
I mean, that's a
safe.
It's a relatively weird question, but where are we safe?
A reasonable one, not like -5 cents.
No, I mean, I would say, if I was locking something in at the moment in a location like that. I think you can make something like, to be comfortable, I would say maybe 4 cents.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Best ASIC model for cold climate mining in Finland. What's the best model to choose?
It's an interesting question. I mean, most of the installed equipment is Bitmain. So, you know, you would most likely choose something like that. But very interesting things happening in equipment manufacturing at the moment. We have some new players and some not so new players that are still coming in very strong. So, you know, I think it's quite likely that we will be deploying something a bit different than that.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Daniel, thank you so much for your time. Please leave people some information where they can find more about you and what you do.
Yes. Thank you very much for inviting me. I think the easiest thing, I mean, I am DF Johnson, DFJONSSON on Twitter, for example. Otherwise, you know, mgmt.is is our main website. You can find some information about us there and feel free to reach out. I will also be, you know, in a couple of weeks at Bitcoin Mina in Abu Dhabi. I'm happy to meet people over there.
Nice. Awesome. Guys, this was Daniel. He is a good friend, very experienced miner. He's got a lot of good things going on. So if you're interested, follow him. No doubt we'll have all the information down below. If you know how this works, subscribe, like, and hit that follow button or whatever. You know, especially the subscriber function works well wonders for the sponsors and myself to show them that this content is valued. So make sure you do that at the end of this if you enjoyed this, if you learned something new. Thank you, Daniel. I'll see you guys next week. And yeah, until then. Cheers, bye.
Thanks, Jesse.